getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
To be honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning, TSN1290.ca. Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. The first Game 7 occurred last night. We know now that it's going to be the Tampa Bay Lightning in the Stanley Cup Finals. Their opponent will be determined in about, probably closer to about 14 hours time from now. We will know if they are going to meet the Chicago Blackhawks or the Anaheim Ducks in the 2015 Stanley Cup Final. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Ezra Ginsberg. Richard Pollock away this week on vacation. Ezzy, good morning. Good to see you. Because he was going away. He was going out of town. What do you mean, why? Anyways, it was a good Game 7 last night between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the New York Rangers. In that the Lightning, with the 2-0 victory over the Rangers in Madison Square Garden, getting rid of the Rangers' dominance in elimination games that we have seen for so long over the last number of years, where they had won the whatever number it was, I believe it was 7 or 8 straight elimination games into getting into the Stanley Cup Finals. But it was a terrific game last night for the Tampa Bay Lightning, absolutely shutting down the New York Rangers last night in Madison Square Garden, just smothering them defensively, which in a tremendous manner. I mean, the New York Rangers aren't an offensive juggernaut by any stretch of the imagination, but for them to have done last night to the New York Rangers, what the Tampa Bay Lightning did last night to the New York Rangers was tremendously impressive in completely shutting them down.
Yeah, I think, is my mic working now? I guess, yeah, I'll use this one. Sorry, Drew, but my mic wasn't on earlier in the segment. So yesterday was kind of a surprise in the sense that you thought that the New York Rangers were always going to win because of their record in Game 7s, Henrik Lundqvist and all these Rangers, and it turned out to be another 2-0 victory for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So absolutely, you got to give credit to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Ben Bishop, who didn't have a good series and really hasn't had a particularly strong playoffs. He's had flashes, and he's obviously got the Tampa Bay Lightning into the Stanley Cup Finals, but he certainly hasn't stolen a series. And, you know, what about Alex Killorn? You know, you talk a lot about the triplets, and they've been excellent for the Tampa Bay Lightning, scoring 28 goals in these playoffs. But Alex Killorn has been on that top line with Steven Stamkos the whole year, and he ends up getting the game-winning goal. He's a great player. And, Tampa Bay Lightning, you know I picked them before the season started to go to the Stanley Cup Finals. So yeah, I'll give myself a pat on the back here.
Mm-hmm. You absolutely deserve it there.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a very solid team. I think the Rangers are a better defensive team, but we saw in this series that at times the Tampa Bay Lightning, their speed off the rush, it was just too much for the New York Rangers. And, you know, hats off to Tyler Johnson, Andre Palat, and Nikita Kucherov. That's one of the top lines in hockey right now. And, you know, Steven Stamkos had, I think, his best series. And you got to give this team credit. John Cooper's got this team back in the finals.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline by Andrew Gross from the Record newspaper in New Jersey. He's the New York Rangers beat writer. Andrew, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Andrew?
Good. Late night, but, today's another day.
I'm sure that the New York Rangers players themselves are a little more despondent than that after that Game 7 defeat on home ice last night, the 2-0 defeat at the hands of the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, it really comes down to the Rangers not being able to score on home ice in the course of this series. Why do you think that was the case? Was it a function of something Tampa had found in their defensive game, or is it more just the New York Rangers themselves struggling a little bit to get the offensive flow going on home ice?
Chris Kreider after the game, because I asked him that, pointed directly to the Rangers' failure to score in the power play at home. They, you know, they were 0-for-2 last night. Two back-to-back chances in the second period with the game still scoreless. And, you know, as Marty St. Louis said after the game, you know, it's kind of cliche, but it's true. You know, the first goal changes the whole tenor of the game in a tight game like that, because you knew there were only going to be a couple of goals scored, maybe. You know, the Rangers only got two shots in 4 minutes of a man advantage time, and they go into the third period scoreless, and the Lightning finally, you know, get a... not a fluky goal. It was a good try by Alex Killorn, you know, kind of a spinning backhander. And Hank, who was brilliant all night, just couldn't squeeze the pants on that one. And it gets through, and all of a sudden the Lightning are collapsing back in their own zone and, you know, making it very, very difficult for the Rangers to get shots through. So the Rangers have to kind of push up and go for the equalizer. And as a result, the Lightning get a second one because the Rangers' defense had loosened a little bit. So, you know, in Kreider's mind, it all went back to those two power play failures in the second period, and the same thing could be said about their 2-0 loss in Game 5.
Andrew, we got to get into we'll get into the series as a whole, you know, as the interview progresses. But what can you say about Ryan McDonagh? I mean, he doesn't start the game, and then you find out after the game that he was playing with a broken foot. How courageous was that, and how impressed were you with the way he played throughout the playoffs?
Yeah, no, he was, there were times where it seemed like, you know, something was definitely bothering him. He was not moving the way Ryan McDonagh normally moves. And, you know, after he did not start the game, the news started to, you know, kind of trickle out. I found out, you know, maybe midway through the first period what was going on. You know, if you talk to these hockey players, this is, you know, they don't see it as they're doing anything courageous. They see it as they're doing their job, and this was Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. And, you know, Mac was kind of matter-of-fact. He wanted to ice the foot. For whatever reason, the icing of the foot did not, you know, take effect quickly enough, so they had to dress 7 defensemen. Matt Hunwick dresses. Ultimately, I don't think that influenced the game one way or another, whether Hunwick played or James Shepard. It was just kind of insurance. And Mac started taking regular shifts in the second period. I mean, would he have been a more effective player over the last, you know, I believe, my belief is he got hurt in Game 4. So would he have been a better player in Games 5, 6, and 7? Well, you know, he had a pretty good Game 6. Even though he missed the morning skate, he played a team-high 21-57 in that game. But last night, you could see that, you know, his skating, which is brilliant, just wasn't, you know, always at the brilliant level last night.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Andrew Gross. Andrew covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. Andrew, you look at, so, you know, the Rangers eliminated last night, bringing an end to their season. Rick Nash, of course, led the Rangers throughout the regular season with just a tremendous offensive output, 42 goals in the regular season. He can only tally 5 in the entirety of the 19 games he played in the playoffs. How much criticism is Rick Nash in store for in the coming days?
Yeah, I think it's due also. I mean, this is 3 straight postseasons where, you know, the obituary on Nash's postseason is, well, he did everything else correctly. You know, he was good defensively, and he was strong along the walls, and, you know, he was creating chances, but he, for the most part, he didn't finish, you know. 5 goals in 19 games. I mean, that's certainly not the same as 42 in, you know, what he play, 80 regular season games or however many regular season games he played. It's certainly not the same ratio. And you know, granted, in the postseason, the ice gets a little tighter, so maybe you don't expect that kind of production. But you know what? The Lightning are getting that kind of production, you know, out of, you know, Tyler Johnson and Steven Stamkos, and look where they're going. You know, Stamkos had a slow start to the postseason, but he found a way to get his goals going. And Nash never got, that streak going. He's such a streaky player. You thought something was going to happen towards the end of this series where, you know, he had three goals in three games, and really, you know, three of his five goals came in a three-game span. And, you know, not to heap it on him, but one of his goals, you know, was a meaningless one in the 4-3 game 2 loss to the Penguins when he scored with 5.3 seconds remaining. So that goal didn't influence the game one bit. So, it is a major point of concern for the Rangers as you sort of pencil them in as a team that's going to make the postseason next year. And the questions just keep growing, and at times it does seem like it is a bit of a mental block for Rick.
Andrew, you mentioned the triplets line, and I don't think there's any doubt that Tyler Johnson, Nikita Kucherov, and Andre Palat have been effective against every team that they've played in the playoffs and really throughout the regular season. You mentioned, you know, some of the defensive problems that the Rangers were having. And when you talk about Henrik Lundqvist and you know, the games that he had that weren't very good earlier in the series, do you just, you know, tip your hat to the Tampa Bay Lightning and how good that offense is? Or do you think you can say that Lundqvist, he didn't have his best series?
You know, Hank, I thought, was at his best game 6 and 7. I mean, when they really, and also game 4. He was amazing in game 4. So, you know, was it his best ever 7-game series? No, I'd agree that certainly was not the case. But, you know, he had 3 games there, you know, and I thought, including last night, where, you know, he gave you absolutely every chance to win the game, and at some point you just need some run production, you know, and he didn't get that in games 5 and 7. And really all through, you know, the series, I mean, what the Lightning did, to go back to your question, yeah, I mean, sometimes you just have to say, wow, the other team was better. And, you know, very impressed with what the Lightning did over 7 games. They played every which way in a style you can play. They matched the Rangers step for step. They played wide open games, and they played these 2-0 games. And they just, you know, ultimately they proved they were a better team than the Rangers, which is, I don't think many people went into the series thinking that. But what they did to the Rangers, particularly at Madison Square Garden, is the most impressive. The Rangers lost 3 of the 4 games at Madison Square Garden in this series. And you know, for a sense of how rare that is, the last time the Rangers lost 3 games in, 3 home playoff games in a series, it was in 1982 to the, Islanders, who were on their way to the 3rd of, 4 Stanley Cups. So, you know, that's not something the Rangers do at home. And also, you know, they get shut out 2-0 game 5, 2-0 game 7. Their last goal of the season at Madison Square Garden came at 14:17 of the second period in game 2. So you think about it, that's a string of 145 minutes and 43 seconds at Madison Square Garden where the Lightning shut out the Rangers. Ben Bishop shut out the Rangers. And you know what? That's why series went to, why the series went to the Lightning. And it's something you just say, yeah, the Lightning deserved this.
You're listening to TSN 1290. Our guest is Andrew Gross, who covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey, discussing last night's Game 7 between the Lightning and the Rangers. I mean, obviously a disappointing result for the Rangers. This isn't how they wanted their season to end. They sort of did go all in, especially after they acquired Keith Yandle at the trade deadline. We'll talk about Yandle, and we'll talk about what the future holds for the Rangers in a minute or two. Just want to touch on Derek Brassard. Led the Rangers in scoring during the playoffs, 16 points in 19 games, 9 goals, 7 assists. Do you get the impression, I mean, he had a good regular season. He had 60 points in the regular season, which was a career high for him. Do you get the impression that Derek Brassard's taking another step forward after a solid regular season and a solid playoffs to become even more of an impressive player for this Rangers team?
Yeah, as Rick Nash said a few days ago, you know, ever since he's come to New York, the progression has been into a premier center. You know, that's how the Rangers paid him last offseason with a 5-year, $25 million contract. So this is what they expect from him. He was so good in the playoffs at times where you do think that, you know, as far as a progression, he's, what, 27? So this is the prime of his career. This is, you know, he is, you know, he can take another step. He can give you more, you know, more point production, you know, maybe some more goals. But Derek Brassard's turning into, or has turned into, one of the better centers in this league. And to be honest, that's what the Blue Jackets expected when they, you know, you take a guy, I think it was sixth overall in a draft. I mean, this is what you expect him to develop into. And it's just that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, whether it was maturity issues or the fact that he didn't push himself on a Blue Jackets team that was, you know, not playoff ready, whatever it is, coming to New York, he just has reacted to the big stage a lot better than he played in Columbus. And yeah, he is a premier center now.
Andrew, Drew mentioned Keith Yandle, and I thought he really sort of came into his own in this series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Did you think the same, and did you think that he also kind of seemed to fit in with the Rangers? Because I know he was supposed to be brought in essentially to make the offense better, but I think his play defensively was a little bit underrated as well.
And you know, I asked him that the other day because Keith Yandle plays a physical defensive game in front of the crease. He is not afraid to get into it with the guys standing in front of the crease. He's not afraid to throw a cross check or two or a little whack around the legs. And he's very good along the boards, you know, crunching guys trying to get past him. So I asked him, you know, whether he thought his defensive game, you know, was a little bit underrated, and specifically the physical style he plays defensively. And he, you know, he sort of maybe agreed. He said he always tries to bring that. But obviously this is a guy that's known for his offense and quarterbacking the power play. You know, all said and done, I thought Keith Yandle was a really, really good addition to the Rangers. Because he brought something, you know, when the power play was clicking, he brought something that Dan Boyle, who was brought in the offseason as a free agent, typically did not bring. So, I thought they needed Yandle. It was a move for now. And, you know, watching the Memorial Cup, you couldn't help look at Anthony Duclair and go, boy, you know, the Rangers next season, you know, if Marty St. Louis does not come back, which is the expectation now after, you know, the way he played in the playoffs with just one goal and the fact he's going to be 40 in about 3 weeks, you know, you figure, boy, Anthony Duclair would fit right into that Rangers lineup next year because they're going to need a scoring wing. They're going to need a dynamic wing. But, you know, for this year, and you know, Glenn Sather assessed his team, and I shouldn't just say Glenn, you know, Jeff Gordon, Jim Schoenfeld, the management team assessed this team, and they needed to be shored up on the defensive core. And I thought Keith Yandle came, and after a little bit of a rough start where he was a little bit hesitant, I thought he brought everything that he was advertised to do.
That sort of leads us into our final question, Andrew, and it's sort of about the Rangers going ahead in the future. You mentioned Marty St. Louis, obviously a rough playoffs for him. You got two big guys, Derek Stepan and Carl Hagelin are both RFAs at the end of this year, coming into this offseason. And then you look at their draft situation. They only have four picks in the entirety of the 2015 draft. They don't have a first-round pick unless they acquire one until 2017. You know, where do the Rangers go from here at this point in time? Are they still in a good position, or is there a little bit of a fear now that, you know, trading away Duclair, trading away the first-round pick, might mean that they have to take a bit of a step back before they can take another step forward?
Well, I think, you know, I think the window is still open for this team. You know, it starts with Henrik Lundqvist. He's going to be 34 next March, so you can still say he's in the prime of his career. And you know what? Henrik Lundqvist in the prime of his career is a really, really good starting, you know, foundation for any team. Like I mentioned, losing Duclair is going to hurt ultimately. As far as the first rounders, you know what? They kind of skirted around it. They signing Kevin Hayes has been huge for them, and you know that was kind of like getting an instant first round pick in. Mm-hmm. Not next season. I think if they can ever get this kid Pavel Buchnevich over from Russia, I think he steps right into the lineup, and he's a big, you know, heavy, you know, strong skater who I think is going to be able to score in the NHL. He's committed to the KHL now for next season.
You've got us googling his name right now because we're not familiar with him.
Okay, no, trust me, Pavel, the Rangers are desperate to get this guy over, Pavel Buchnevich. They really want him in the lineup, but he decided to go back to the KHL next season. You know, down in the minors, you know, it's not, you know, overly stocked, but I think they're hoping an Oscar Lindberg can develop and come in. And they also have Ryan Haggerty, the guy they had on the roster at the end of last season who played a full season at Hartford. So there are candidates within the system. You know, the cupboard is not necessarily there. What they do with Carl Hagelin as an RFA will be interesting because they're going to be tight against the cap. I do think Carl is an integral part to this team. Could I see him trading him for, you know, maybe picks or, you know, another piece? That's a possibility depending on the cap situation, because they're going to have to pay Derek Stepan. You know, no matter how you turn it, this guy, you know, he's their number one center. You know, as much as we talk about Brass, I mean, Step is, you know, I know he plays not with Rick Nash, so he's technically on probably the second line. But I would say he's, you know, he's their number one center, and he's going to make about $6 million a year. And how the Rangers are able to fit that in is going to shape next year's team. And, also you got JT Miller coming up as an RFA, and he deserves a little bit of money because, you know, after, you know, once he kind of got his maturity issues together, he's become a guy you can put on the top line, and he's a strong complement. And, you know, I would also like to know, you know, how Matt Zuccarello comes back next year after missing two straight 7-game series with a concussion. You know, there were some ugly internet rumors that I think ultimately will be proven false. But, you know, Zuc's got to regain his health for next season.
A lot of questions in the offseason for the Rangers front office brass to answer, and we look forward to getting all those answers as the summer unfolds. Andrew, appreciate your time as always this morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
No, great talking to you guys, and enjoy the Cup Final and tonight's Game 7. Should be a great one.
Likewise, I'm sure you'll be able to enjoy kicking up your feet, not having to write about it. It makes it a much more appealing way to watch it, doesn't it?
Yeah, sometimes I don't know what to do with myself without a computer in front of my face, but I will try my best.
Can we suggest some wine or beer instead? I mean, just, you know, throwing that out there, maybe, you know, treat yourself to one of those things.
Yeah, Andrew, I got to tell you, drinking's a great pastime.
Andrew, appreciate it throughout the year and everything else.
All right, have a great one, guys.
You too, Andrew. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Andrew.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Andrew Gross of the Record newspaper in New Jersey joining us to talk about the Rangers and the Lightning Game 7 last night. Always appreciate Andrew joining us on the show. Great insight into the Rangers. Pavel Buchnevich is who he mentioned that the Rangers are desperate to get.
Yeah, 2013 draft pick.
Yeah, 2013 third-round draft pick. I admit, not familiar with him, but Andrew certainly knows him, and the Rangers apparently interested in getting him over from the KHL.
Didn't that make you think of Pavel Brendel?
Well, they're both named Pavel, so
but
yeah.
But also, last name starts with B.
And both Rangers prospects and everything else.
Brendel was fourth overall in 1999, I remember right. That, and he was supposed to be
the next big thing.
A very solid hockey player, and he never played a game for the Rangers and
didn't he go to Philly eventually?
He did, and he didn't play much in the NHL.
Yeah. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at Bernstein's Deli. .com.
Yeah, Drew, before we get into the series here,
yeah,
you know, just on, you know, talking about Andrew Gross, you should really follow him on Twitter. He's so knowledgeable about the New York Rangers. He's been covering the team. We have him on all the time. We've had him on probably over the years 30 or 40 times.
Probably.
And, you know,
he'd be sick of us by now.
he's a great follow because he writes every single day, and He has his own separate blog, Ranger Rants.
That's right. You can follow him on Twitter, A Gross Record.
Yeah.
Works. So Andrew Gross, A Gross Record.
It's great to have him on. I mean, and again, nobody. I think that, you know, everyone was, again, this is why they play the games, and it's Game 7. Everyone was expecting the Rangers to win because they just don't lose those Game 7s at MSG. But he made a good point. I mean, you got to give the Lightning credit, Ben Bishop credit, for going in to MSG twice and shutting them out.
Yeah.
You got to give them credit. The Rangers, I don't think, played their best, and they had some injuries. Ryan McDonagh playing on a broken foot, I mean, I think is... I know he says that these guys don't want to talk about courage and all that, but mm-hmm. he played on a broken foot.
The Rangers had 22 shots in the game yesterday. I mean, Ben Bishop, who, you know, wasn't great throughout the course of the series in a lot of games, but there were the games that he was good, he was very good. So the games he was lousy in, he was pretty lousy in. And the games that he was good in, he was very good in. So it's sort of either it was hit or miss when it came to Ben Bishop. And last night, the Lightning hit on Ben Bishop. And the smother, I mean, you know, I was saying this in the first segment, the smothering defensive effort by the Lightning to prevent the Rangers from getting a shot on goal in the final 7 minutes of the game. You know, I don't exactly know. I have to find the exact stat, but that's an incredible performance by the Tampa Bay Lightning, a team not known for their team defense, in just shutting down the New York Rangers yesterday in that critical Game 7.
No, you make a good point, Drew, and you have to give Ben Bishop credit. And I felt like, especially in Games 5 and 7, the Tampa Bay Lightning played a different game. Let's be honest, Game 6 mm-hmm. at Amalie Arena, they were terrible. They looked like a preseason effort from the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I think John Cooper had these guys playing really well on the road, and I think they knew that they couldn't win a game 5-4, 6-5 on the road. And you're right, they played very well defensively, and you got to give the Tampa Bay Lightning, they know what makes them successful. And this mm-hmm. team, and earlier in the game, I mean, Valtteri Filppula almost scored. Tyler Johnson towards the end of the second period.
Huge save by Lundqvist.
Had a great chance mm-hmm. on Henrik Lundqvist. I mean, it's not like the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, just kind of scored a couple goals and they weren't trying to score goals. Lundqvist was great, and the goals that they scored, I mean, Killorn's goal, backhand, you know, Lundqvist probably wanted that back.
Yeah. That goal goes in because I think Lundqvist plays so deep in his net. If he plays, and that's his style, so I'm not criticizing him for it. If Lundqvist is up at the top of the blue paint, I don't think that goal necessarily squeaks through him like it did. But he's playing so deep, and you know, once it squeaks through you a little bit, you have no room for error after that. Also, didn't look like he saw that shot very, very well.
Yeah, there could have been a little bit of traffic. Yeah. There was a little bit of traffic, and that could have upset him a little bit. But you make a good point, Drew. I mean, that's his style. Mm-hmm. Henrik Lundqvist has a style that's very different than a lot of goaltenders, especially a guy like Corey Crawford.
Sure.
Likes to come out a lot and challenge shooters. Lundqvist has a unique style, and it's tough to kind of challenge him at this point in his career.
Well, we're not about to do it because he's one of the best goalies in the league. If not, you know, he's top three goaltender.
But it is a good point. I mean, in that case, that hurt him.
That's right. In that one instance, it came back to bite him a little bit.
Yep.
I didn't think he was great in the series. I mean, the Rangers' best players weren't better than the Tampa Bay Lightning's best players. I mean, you can sort of look at it as simple as that. You know, if you match them up, you know, the best scorers on both players, on both teams, Rick Nash and Steven Stamkos, let's say. Stamkos was better than Nash. You know, Tyler Johnson was incredible. The depth guys on Tampa were better. And Henrik Lundqvist wasn't what you expect to see Henrik Lundqvist be more often than not. Now, was he better than Ben Bishop? Probably on a whole he was, because when Ben Bishop was bad, he was really bad.
Yeah, he was pulled in Game 6.
Yeah, he was pulled in Game 6. I'm sort of giving the Lightning a pass in Game 6, especially when you hear that John Cooper said after the game that the entire team was being hit by the flu bug, and a lot of their players were on IVs the morning of the game just to try and be able to go, to get the energy to play in that game. So that sort of, to me, explains, you know, gives them a little bit of a free pass for their poor performance on home ice in Game 6. But the way the Lightning came out in Game 7, and you hear Steven Stamkos talking about it, you know, how calm they were around the dressing room, how it was the most calm team he's ever been around in a Game 7, I think speaks to the confidence that the Lightning had going into the game.
Yeah, you make a good point, Drew. And you know, you mentioned Steven Stamkos, and obviously Killorn got the big goal yesterday, and they put Filppula on that top line after Ryan Callahan had that appendectomy, because Callahan was on the first line for a big majority of the season, and I think that was a strong move. I think you had two very strong lines, and you mentioned Stamkos struggled earlier in the playoffs, and Killorn, I think, continues to get better and better. He's got 16 points. It's incredible. for a guy that really came into his own last year. But right now, this triplets line of Johnson, Palat, and Kucherov, I mean, this is the best line in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless if it's Anaheim or Chicago in the Stanley Cup Finals, they're going to have to shut that line down. These guys on the rush, you give them a little bit of open ice, and these guys can hurt you. And yeah. it's not like you can just shut down one of these guys. And they are all dangerous. They pass the puck really nice. And it's been impressive to watch them. And, you know, we talked about it before the season. The playoffs started, the series. Henrik Lundqvist is right now the only goalie that's left. He's not left anymore, but he was the only goalie left in the conference finals that had the ability to steal these games.
That's right.
Again, I don't think Ben Bishop stole these games. I know he got the shutout, but I don't feel like that he was the difference.
I think it was the team defense that was the difference.
Yes.
You speak to that, Henrik Lundqvist being knocked out of the playoffs, and now you're left with goaltenders, you know, Ben Bishop and either Frederik Andersen or Corey Crawford.
And Cam Talbot's probably on his way out.
Probably, because he's going to be a UFA after next season. He's the backup to Henrik Lundqvist, of course, and they can get a fair bit of in a return for Cam Talbot. At least they expect to. And then we were talking about that with Andrew Gross, about how they're very thin on draft picks for this upcoming draft. But with Ben Bishop being one of the starting goaltenders, and either Corey Crawford or Frederik Andersen being the other starting goaltender in the Stanley Cup Finals, and the offensive dynamite that we see from the Tampa Bay Lightning with the triplets and Stamkos, I think we're in for a high-scoring Stanley Cup Finals, which not great defenses, and I think a lot of offense, which, you know, as a viewer, I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, and
especially if Chicago wins.
How can that not be the case? Frederik Andersen, you know, you can talk about the Jonathan Toews goal that tied it up, in Game 5, which you just can't let in. But Frederik Andersen was really good against the Jets, and he was pretty solid against the Calgary Flames. This is the series that we've really seen maybe the lack of playoff experience. I like Freddie Andersen. I know if Richie was here, he'd be getting in on this, because I know he thinks Freddie Anderson's pretty underrated. You know, there was that issue, would it be John Gibson or Andersen? There was no question throughout the season that Freddie Andersen was the number one goalie. But you're right, Drew. I mean, there isn't a Carey Price in the Stanley Cup Finals this year. There won't be.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless if it's Corey Crawford. I mean, Corey Crawford, he's had all types of problems. First round, he got pulled for Scott Darling.
Twice?
I mean, that's kind of been the storyline. And, we got to say, these Stanley Cup playoffs have really gotten exciting. I know it kind of slowed down for a lot of people, but this is the first time since 2000 that both conference finals have gone to Game 7.
Mm-hmm.
That's 15 years. I mean, and last night's game, it wasn't necessarily a classic, but it was a good, solid game, and you had the storyline of Ryan Callahan wanting to beat his old team, and you had the Tampa Bay Lightning with a new coach. You know, I know it's not his first year in the NHL, but a relatively young coach trying to get back to the Stanley Cup Finals. And you had the Rangers, you know, trying to prove that they could get back to the Stanley Cup Finals. I think the playoffs have been really excellent. And the quality of hockey, you mentioned the goals, Drew.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, the argument this year, we talked about it a lot on our show. There just wasn't a lot of goals. And, you know, you're starting to see these high-scoring games. And it's great. That's what I know the, you know, games 5 and 7 of the series were 2-0, but you know, we saw a lot of goals in this series.
I think you're going to see even more goals in the Stanley Cup Final. You're going to see goals tonight between Chicago and Anaheim as we get the second game 7. We'll talk about that coming up in a little bit on the program. As we head to break, here's a montage of what game 7 sounded like last night between Tampa Bay and New York. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I slot Philpula, shoots, blocked. The rebound
block.
He's going to be held in by Stallman, right circle. Anton Stallman walks to the right corner. Shoots. It got fought up by Lundqvist. Now Karloff went shot to a screen. Deflected in front.
Top of the net
by Stamkos. Bobbling puck. Rattles out to Kucherov in center. Pass block. It comes back into the Lightning in for Hedman. Up middle, Tyler Johnson with speed at center. Cross the blue line. Left circle, Palat. Holds. Back
shoot
in front,
the
Johnson
puck.
Block. Rebound. Kucherov
shoots.
Oh,
what a Pitch save.
Out by Lundqvist. Here's McDonough back in his own end. Pass stolen by Johnson at center. Tyler Johnson lays it for Palat. Side across the Rangers line, right circle. Block. We'll get a knife in front. Shoots. Oh, he just missed wide
just
left.
Missed.
Here's Garrison with the rebound. Left circle shot. Saved by Lundqvist. Girardi dumps the puck around the far side. It's held in by and right Palat, right corner. Right circle Kucherov. Nikita Kucherov. Hold. In front. Garrison.
Oh,
shoots.
What a save.
By Lundqvist. Garrison
That's
left corner.
Unbelievable save.
Right Palat to the red line. They'll flick it in with a minute 40 left in the period. Kucherov after it, behind the net. He's in front, right, Palat behind the net. Right corner, Kucherov in front, Johnson!
Oh, my gosh! What a save!
Right side, Philpula. Drops it for Carl. Off the center ice, and Pallor merges with it at the red line. Pallor across the Rangers' blue line left circle. Pallor stops, looks to make a play. Cutting toward the slot. Backhand shot!
Score! It's in! Pallor! 1-0 Lightning with 18:06 left.
Marquette loses Dan Boyle. See the far side for Miller. Pass to Brown. High slot. Puckett shoots.
Oh, what a save. Lundquist. Wow.
And he covers.
What a save that was.
Bishop pulled on the puck. Flipping around the far side for Palat. Taps it to Tyler Johnson, and he skates onto it. Johnson speeding down the right wing. Cross the blue line, right circle. Cross ice, Palat, left circle. Shoots! Score!
Palat! 2-0 Lightning! With 8:43 left! What a finish!
Kucherov has it in the offensive zone.
Dumps it behind the net. 5 seconds left! The Lightning are going to play for the Stanley Cup! A 2-0 shutout in Game 7 for Ben Bishop! The Lightning win it! They win it! On to the final!
...20 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. As you want to talk about the Rangers, we were speaking about it with Andrew Gross of the Record newspaper a little bit earlier in the hour. You know, this New York Rangers team is interesting in where they go from here. I mean, I have to believe that they were all in on winning the Stanley Cup this year, especially with the, and I think that was evidenced by the big Keith Yandel trade. You know, obviously they paid a huge price to get Keith Yandel out of the Phoenix organization, or the Arizona organization, pardon me, giving up Anthony Duclair, who looks dynamite in junior. First round pick this year, a second round pick. They already don't have a first round pick coming up the first round pick next year. They don't have a first round pick this year. So this Rangers team seems like they were in for broke, and then they ended up busting out before the Stanley Cup Finals. This is they have so many good young players still that it's not that the window's closed. I agree with Andrew in that front. But they are sort of right on the precipice where I'm not sure which way they're going to go based on the thin roster they have and the thin number of draft picks upcoming.
Precipice, great word, by the way.
Thank you.
You asked Andrew about this, and I thought his answer was interesting. You talk about Carl Hagelin. And Stepan to me is such a key player, a very underrated player. He's not a guy that is as flashy as some, and he's not a guy that's going to necessarily be top 10 in the league in scoring, but a very solid player. And along with Chris Kreider, and others, this team is, I think, and still have years of being a contending team. And Carl Hagelin, he might have struggled at times, and he didn't have the best regular season either. I know that because I had him in my hockey pool, and he wasn't very good.
Uh-huh.
But to me, it goes back to what Andrew Gross talked about with Henrik Lundqvist. He's about to turn 34, and I think you're going to start to hear those questions, Drew. Maybe I'm asking them right now on the show, but I think you're going to hear about, well, is he too old? Are his best years behind him? Well, Marty Brodeur, did it well into his late 30s and took the Devils to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Pardon me, finals in 2012 against the LA Kings. I think Lundqvist has a good solid 4 or 5 years at least left in him.
I agree.
He's in good shape. He's a guy that, he might have had some injury problems earlier this season, and Talbot had to step in for him. But back to the goaltending and, to me, the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Mark Stahl under contract long term. You have Girardi and McDonough under contract long term. Yandel, you mentioned that they gave up Anthony Duclair, who's playing the Memorial Cup right now. They have Yandel for another year.
And then Yandel's going to be a big ticket player after the 2015-16 season. But the good thing that the Rangers have going for them at that point is Dan Boyle comes off the books. So Dan Boyle, who's making $4.5 million this upcoming season, and Keith Yandel's making $2.625, what's going to happen, I suspect, is Boyle will go on his way because he'll be 39 years old at that point in time. And a lot of the money that the Rangers have in Boyle will go to Yandel to try and keep him around. But they have a lot of money tied up on their back end.
Yeah, but the positive side of that, or I guess you would say the flip side of that, is that it's one of the best defenses in the NHL,
yeah.
Right? So if you're going to tie up a lot of money, make sure that you tie it up in the right guys. I mean, Ryan McDonough, I like Ryan McDonough more and more every year, and I think that this is one of the best captains in the NHL. I mean, he plays on a broken foot, just really incredible stuff. Girardi's excellent, and Mark Stahl, I think, gets overshadowed by those guys. But, you know, I thought back to Dan Boyle, Drew. I thought Dan Boyle struggled, and, you know, he's getting a little older, and he's a little slower. You know, he still can contribute on the power play, and he's still a good offensive defenseman. But to me, you know, he's been kind of reduced. Dan Boyle's not really a guy that can be that effective in your top four.
Yeah.
And I realize for the New York Rangers, you know, at times he plays less minutes. But I think you're right. I think Keith Yandle's a guy that I think they look to sign when his contract's up. And Dan Boyle's probably a guy that they don't bring back. I thought it was also interesting, you know, Andrew Gross. I think there's no doubt that Marty St. Louis is not coming back. I wouldn't be surprised if a team takes a chance on him and gives him a one-year deal or two-year deal. But when you consider that guys like Hagelin and Derek Stepan have to be signed,
yeah.
I just don't. St. Louis isn't going to come back and play for $1 million. And so you're going to have to pay him. And
I don't think anybody's going to pay him, you know, much more than that, given that he'll be 40 years old and given what they just saw from him in these playoffs. I mean, you know, when you're 40 years old, you can play 56. And we see it with Jagr every year. He plays.
Someone's going to sign him still, though.
Probably. You're probably right. But, I mean, you see it with Jagr. You know, he comes out and he plays the best, you know, 40, 50 game stretch. And then he just tires out at the end of the year, which is not unreasonable given that the guy is 40 years old.
That's why you got to sign. The team that signs him has to be a deep team.
It can't be a young team.
Absolutely, you're right. I mean, it's got to be a team that, as the playoffs progress, you know, he plays on the third line or fourth line. To me, you know, you saw that last year with Brad Richards, and I think the Rangers made a little bit of a miscalculation there. I mean, Brad Richards has been pretty good for the Chicago Blackhawks, but you're right, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
Marty St. Louis' most productive years are behind him, but he'll probably still play another year or two in the NHL.
Yeah, probably because that's what he knows how to do, and if he can keep sticking with the contract. The Rangers will be a team interesting to watch. Not a ton of cap room, only about a $9.5 million of cap space entering this offseason. They're big free agents that got assigned, Stepan, Hagelin, JT Miller, really going to be an interesting team.
We didn't mention JT Miller. He was good.
Yeah.
Good, solid player.
Well, I mean,
fast player.
Andrew mentioned him, that once he got his maturity issues sort of under his belt and everything else, then he was a good contributing member to the Rangers. Be an interesting team to watch, especially with that Carl Hagelin RFA status. You know, maybe the Rangers try and reacquire a draft pick and dangle Hagelin's contract rights as something in exchange.
He only had 5 points in 19 games.
In the playoffs.
So, you know, I don't have his numbers here in front of me, but I think he had 25 points, something like that, 30 points in the regular season. He didn't have a good regular season either.
He had a much better playoffs last year. This year he had 35 points in 82 games, 17
yeah.
goals, 18 assists. He had 12 points in the playoffs last year, 12 points in 25 games. So this was a bit of a down year in the playoffs
streaky
for Carl
score.
Hagelin. Yeah, streaky score, but fast. A lot of speed. Down the left side there, a lot of speed for Carl Hagelin. Anyways, it'll be something worth watching. We hit the break. When we come back, we look at the other Game 7 between the Blackhawks and the Ducks. You're listening to Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
More thrust for the Ducks. Raquel into the hot zone. Down the right wing. Lines and fires. Blocked by Oduya with five. Raquel from the corner fires off the side of the net. 3 seconds. 2-1. This series is tied at 3 games apiece. And we will head to Southern California for game number 7 on Saturday night. The Chicago Blackhawks win tonight 5-2 in game number 6. They hand the Ducks their first regulation loss of the playoffs and simultaneously not up this series.
That's the final call of Game 6 between the Ducks and the Blackhawks, where the Blackhawks win on home ice to extend the series and send it back to Anaheim for tonight's Game 7. This has been a fantastic series, Ezzy. I should mention before we get into the series that this segment is brought to you by Zappia Group Realty, Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. The Blackhawks and the Ducks series, as he just, this has been such an entertaining series. This is reminiscent of last year's. It's not quite as good, but it's reminiscent of last year's Kings Blackhawks series in the Western Conference Finals that also went 7 games between two fantastic teams that really weren't separated by very much at all, except for, you know, how the games ended up.
Can we put that to bed though right now, like these comparisons? to the Chicago Blackhawks LA Kings series. Like, that series was incredible, and it's going to be tough to ever match that. There's going to be new series. So I agree with you. I know what you're saying. This series has turned out to be pretty good, but I just think, you know, everyone wants to keep going back to last year. I'm not saying you. I'm just saying a lot of people have been, you know, asking me, you know, do I think this is better than last series? I think
I don't. Know, for the record, I think last year's was better, but this has been this has been pretty damn good hockey.
No, it's been amazing, and I think last year was one of those series. Like, that was you only get one of those series every 5 years.
Yeah,
right. And the LA Kings coming back down, right? So this series has, I mean, the goaltending has just been atrocious, and it's been a fun series to watch, and I think to me. Again, you know, Joel Quenneville going back to David Rundblad. To me, that's been my biggest concern with the Chicago Blackhawks, in addition to the goaltending, is the D.
Yeah.
And Kimmo Timonen comes out of the lineup. He hasn't been playing a lot throughout the playoffs, didn't play at all during the regular season. And Joel Quenneville's now used Kimmo Timonen, and with the Roosevelt injury last round, he's gone Rundblad, Kumiski. We thought maybe Trevor Van Riemsdyk was going to go in there. Mm-hmm. I thought that was going to be the Achilles heel of the Chicago Blackhawks. I picked the Hawks to win the series in seven, but going into that game, I mean, I didn't have a lot of confidence in Chicago. You know, this team, you know, it doesn't ever cease to amaze you what Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Marian Hossa, I mean, you got to give Andrew Shaw scored a beautiful goal. These guys just...
Hey, let me interrupt you for 1 second. I think the best player in that game, in game six for the Chicago Blackhawks, was the one guy you didn't mention, Duncan Keith.
Well, hey, I know how much I like Duncan Keith.
Duncan Keith played 28 minutes.
Three assists.
Three assists, yep. 28 minutes and 35 seconds of ice time.
Well, I told you, I think if the Hawks go to the Stanley Cup Finals, I think he gets the Conn Smythe regardless.
He has been unbelievable in these playoffs, especially
he's one of the best defensemen in the NHL. I think this, absolutely. You know, he's gotten overshadowed, rightly so. I know Richie thinks Drew Doughty's the best defenseman. Hey, these water cooler arguments, these are all great defensemen. But whatever you want to call him, second best, third best, top five. I mean, Duncan Keith is an elite defenseman who has the ability to control games. And there aren't a lot of defensemen in the NHL that can do that. I mean, you're talking about Subban, Carlson, we mentioned Doughty. There aren't that many players. And Duncan Keith's vision, I mean, you're right. I mean, he was incredible. And, you know, he set up some really nice goals in that game. Mm-hmm. This was a fun game to watch. I thought the Anaheim Ducks, this was one of their weaker games, because we haven't seen, you know, the Ryan Getzlaffs, the Corey Perrys, we haven't seen them have too many bad games in these playoffs. And I thought they were pretty ineffective. And you got to give the Chicago Blackhawks credit. I mean, they're desperate.
Yeah.
Their backs are up against the wall, and they could be eliminated. And they came. They always seem to really get up for these games. They've been there time and time again. The amount of playoff experience that the Chicago Blackhawks have is incredible. I mean, you can go up and the amount of games played they have versus the Ducks. I realize Getzlaff, Perry, and Beauchemin have the most experience, but, you know, once you get past those guys, I mean, they just don't have a Marian Hossa on their team.
No, they don't have the real depth guys who have got a ton of experience like Hossa, you mentioned. From a Ducks perspective, I think that, you know, the way they played in Game 6 almost leaves me to believe that they're better off in Game 7 because they played so poorly in Game 6. Now, hear me out. If they had
played, do I have a choice?
No, you don't really have a choice. But you could. I mean, I suppose you could get up and leave the studio, but I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't do that. The way they played in Game 6 was, you know, if they had played a terrific game in Game 6 and still fallen short,
yep,
maybe they play one of their best games of the series and they still somehow lose that game. I think that's a lot more demoralizing and has a lot more of a lingering effect than how they played in Game 6, which is pretty poor. They know it's poor. They say, look, we got beat because we played so poorly, we know that we need to step up our game another level. So, and they definitely have that level in which they can step up. So I'm expecting a classic almost tonight between these two teams, because the Blackhawks know that this team to some degree is getting split up at the end of the season just by the salary cap ramifications.
Yeah, so I agree with that.
So I think they want to desperately win to keep it going and try and win another cup with this core group. And the Ducks know that they played so poorly in Game 6 that if they play like that, they're going to get absolutely killed on home ice. And I don't think they're as mentally fragile as they were last year when they played Game 7 on home ice to the Los Angeles Kings and got beat up by the Kings on home ice. I don't foresee that happening by the Blackhawks, because the Blackhawks aren't, you know, they're not a physical team like that. It's going to be an up and down game as opposed to a physical game. I think the Ducks come back strong tonight. I think the Blackhawks keep going what they played like in Game 6. And I think we're in for an absolute doozy tonight between these two teams. I think it's going to be a fantastic hockey game.
Yeah, it can't not be a classic, Drew. And I agree with you. I think you make a good point. I know you could say Chicago has the momentum right now. But three overtime games in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to Anaheim, and where we know that they're going to have their fans behind them. I don't really believe in that. I think, you know, there is some carryover. I think especially, you know, going into this game, Frederik Andersen, you know, he didn't play his best in Game 6.
Mm-hmm.
But these games take on a life of their own. When it's a one game, winner takes all, you know, we saw that yesterday. You can throw out all of the momentum and, you know, who has the advantage. I mean, you have two teams right now that are extremely deep. And I think Anaheim, you know, has the edge really in every area. I don't think any team has the edge in goaltending, but I think Anaheim's defense has played really well. They can move the puck. But I think, you know, when you're talking about the, and there were some defensive miscues. I mean, the Anaheim Ducks were exposed, and they didn't play as strong as they could have. But I think that, you know, to your point, I think they're a team that has to get prove to themselves that they can beat the best. The Chicago Blackhawks have been here time and time again.
Yeah.
And it's going to be an excellent game. I agree with you. I think, but back to what you were saying about, you know, they're going to be tentative and maybe not as physical. The Anaheim Ducks have to be physical. They're the most effective. They came into Winnipeg and completely beat up the Jets. Matt Bolesky and Getzlaff. And, I mean, they're a big, strong team. They got to do that, and I didn't think they were doing that enough in Game 6.
Right, but my point was, last year in Game 7, when the Kings played there in Anaheim, the Kings sort of came in and bullied them. That's not the Blackhawks' game. It obviously isn't to bully anybody with physicality. The Blackhawks' game is based on skill and speed and everything else. So I think that they're not going to be intimidated by the Blackhawks physically. They might be intimidated by them and their offensive capabilities, but I think Anaheim will say, well, you know, we'll match our physicality against your offensive capabilities. And we can flip a coin and we'll see who's going to win this game.
If you let Chicago dictate the pace, and they've done this time, there's a reason why they've won two Stanley Cups in the last 5 years. You let them dictate the pace. You can't give them this much time. I thought that, you know, the Ducks got away from that.
Yeah.
They were trying to be too fancy at times, and you know they have to get back to playing that type of hockey. That's when they're the most effective. We know that.
They need to go in and they need to, I mean, Duncan Keith, like I said, 28-35 in the game six. David Rundblad, who you know played 5 minutes and 53 seconds, and Comiskey played 7:15. So the Blackhawks are continuing to really just go with four defensemen. And
they've done that for almost the entirety of the playoffs.
Yes, they have. And you just have to figure, at some point, isn't it going to catch up? It hasn't yet. If they come in and if you come into this game tonight and you make a point, and it's so hard to hit Duncan Keith because that puck is in the zone and out of the zone so quickly because he's that good. If you can go and finally maybe get a couple body checks in on Duncan Keith, and you can get the matchups you want, where you want Kessler to go up against Jonathan Toews, and it'll be interesting to see if Joel Quenneville keeps Toews and Kane together like he did in Game 6. There's so many moving parts of this series that this is going to be a fantastic Game 7. It's going to be better than last night's Game 7.
I think you got to keep them together. I think, you know, that move was made partly out of desperation, and I realize that Toews and Kane usually aren't on the same line. Usually they have Toews with Hossa and Saad, and then they've usually got Kane on that second line. And I think that you got to keep those two guys together based on Game 6, but I agree. I think this is going to be a fantastic game, and would anybody be surprised if it's the fourth overtime game of the series?
No, it wouldn't. I wouldn't be surprised in the least bit. Let's head to break. When we come back, more on the series. We're going to be joined by Lance Pugmire of the LA Times. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell alongside Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Los Angeles Times. He covers the Anaheim Ducks, Lance Pugmire. Lance, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Anytime. Thank you.
Lance obviously brought you on to talk about the Game 7 going to take place in Anaheim tonight between the Ducks and the Blackhawks. And you wrote about it in the Los Angeles Times, I believe it's in today's LA Times, about the key to Game 7 being the Anaheim Ducks neutralizing Duncan Keith. If the Ducks don't do that, do you think that they can still end up winning this series and Game 7?
They need to, you know, they need to keep him in check. I think that they're writing off that he's going to have some kind of impact in the game. He's just on the ice so often that, and he's such a talented, skilled player that he's going to affect this game in some way. You know, obviously they want no part of a repeat of Game 6 when he assisted on those three goals within a span of 3 minutes, 45 seconds. He was sensational, especially on the second goal scored by Marian Hossa where, he just stood in front of the net, looked for his options, found Hossa, and they buried it. And I think that what the Ducks want to get back to is playing the way they played in the first period of Game 5, where they kept the puck in front of Corey Crawford. They outshot the Chicago 11-3 in that period and had a 3-0 lead. They want to keep the puck, but they want to keep Keith on the defensive, not allow him to be on the offensive.
You know, Lance, you look at the Anaheim Ducks, and they were an excellent regular season team, and obviously here in Winnipeg, I think we got a little bit carried away, and we didn't give them enough credit, and we saw the result. It was a 4-0 sweep, but when you talk about the Anaheim Ducks, and Getzlaff and Perry and Beauchemin have that Stanley Cup from 2007, but there's a lot of young players on this team. The last few years, the Ducks have struggled to take that next step, and you look at the Ducks, and they've lost their last three Game 7s. Do you think that this group... You know, not just Getzlaff and Perry, but you can throw in Kessler in there, and Kessler doesn't have a Stanley Cup. He's got a taste of the finals, but do you think this team has quite a bit to prove?
They do. They absolutely do. And, you know, that they, in some ways, they acknowledge that, but it's still that this is their cross to bear, no doubt. This Game 7 against the Chicago Blackhawks, who've won two of the last five Stanley Cups and have all that experience on their roster. The Ducks, you know, want to be able to take that next step, and this is the opportunity to do so. They're on home ice. They feel like every time that they've had a major slip throughout the season, they've worked hard to address it. I was talking to Clayton Stoner, I believe it was in the story, where he says, look, one of the things we're really good at is not pretending, you know, when we have flaws that we need to address. We acknowledge them and we try to get better. So, they believe that this is just one more game in which they'll need to do so, as they've done throughout the season. It's obviously the most talented cast that they're dealing with, so that's the crux of why everyone will be watching Game 7.
Our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is Lance Pugmire of the LA Times, discussing Game 7 between the Blackhawks and the Ducks. It's going to take place in Anaheim later on this evening. Lance, you know, we know the history about the Anaheim Ducks in Game 7. It isn't a good one. It's not a good one for a lot of their players. It's not a good one for head coach Bruce Boudreau, 1-5 all-time in Game 7s that he's coached in. Why is this Ducks team better suited for this Game 7 as opposed to the last couple of years, losing on home ice to the LA Kings last year and then losing in Game 7 to the Detroit Red Wings the year before?
Well, honestly, I think that they were built from last year's Game 7, and what happened in that when they were blown out, they trailed the Kings 3-0 in the first period and were just blown away in that game. And from that moment, the general manager, Bob Murray, said, We need to be tougher. We need to be grittier. We need to have the experience where we can endure a pressure-packed Game 7. So what he did was, starting with going out and getting Ryan Kessler, who's known for that, he also added a couple tough guys, Clayton Stoner being one of those from Minnesota, who had a tremendous playoff last year, and then the checking center, Nate Thompson, who's you know, started off the series very strongly. His line was very effective. And with that type of experience, they believe that they're, you know, they've fortified. You add a year of maturity to Hampus Lindholm, who had a bad Game 7 against the Kings, and Sammy Vatanen played well, Cam Fowler. All these guys are a year older, and they're very, you know, up-and-coming players. So I think from that standpoint, they built from the last game seven to be ready for this Game 7. That's what I think Bob Murray would tell you. And that's what they're hoping, you know, they will see the fruit gets born here in this game.
Lance, are you expecting any lineup changes for tonight's Game 7? I know that Emerson Edom's fallen out a favor a little bit, and they've been going with Fleischman.
Right. They had Fleischman in at practice. We'll know more. They're going to skate here in about an hour. They had Fleischman in there, and then they shifted Yuri Peacock off a line. So, yeah, I think that just the addition of Fleischman, and again, this is a guy that they brought in at the trade deadline, provides some veteran experience, hasn't contributed heavily at all. In fact, he doesn't have a point. But the Ducks are 5-0 in the playoffs when he's played. So I think just he's like a security blanket. He's not going to make the mistake that can cost you a game, and he'll know what to do if he's in position to strike.
Lance, I think you made a really interesting point. Hampus Lindholm, we've had Dan Wood, who's obviously the Ducks radio color man, and he's always praised Hampus Lindholm, and I agree with you. He struggled last game. Is that the key to Game 7? I know you can talk all you want about matchups and all that, but it's really going to be a one-game winner-takes-all. But is that the key, the way they respond? Because they didn't play very good defensively in Game 6.
They absolutely have to be on their A game. I mean, Cam Fowler, Hampus Lindholm, Sammy Vatanen, they have to pay attention, and they have to be, they have to man up, so to speak. And I think that, they're ready to do that. I think that they have done that throughout the season at points. And as long as the Ducks revert to the way that they should be playing the game, I just think with the support of their home crowd, and as long as Freddie Anderson can be effective in net and not have a game like he had toward the end of Game 5, I actually like the Ducks' chances in this game. But if any of those things do not happen, this game it will be Chicago.
We're joined by Lance Pugmire of the LA Times discussing Game 7. It's going to take place later on tonight between the Anaheim Ducks and the Chicago Blackhawks. Lance, you mentioned Freddie Anderson. Obviously, he had the struggles in Game 5, giving up the two late goals, including the pretty awful goal by Jonathan Taves that tied the game. Wasn't great in Game 6, but really all of the Ducks weren't great in Game 6. Do you expect that there's going to be a lingering effect to sort of these bad couple of periods, or pretty much four straight sort of poor periods by Freddie Anderson, or do you think that he's going to shake it off and come back strong in this key critical Game 7?
Yeah, like you said, I thought that he played a better Game 6 than he did in Game 5, and Game 5 actually throughout the game, well, especially from the start of the second period on, it just, in watching this guy all season, it looked like he was letting the game get to him, the magnitude of the game. He just didn't look like himself. I thought that he seemed to have righted himself in Game 6, but like you said, there were so many other breakdowns that really hurt him. That's what I thought allowed for the Chicago's breakthrough. Now, again, he's only, his last home game, he had this kind of shaken outing. So can he effectively shut that off and find himself? He's saying all the right things. All of the guys 100% have his back and expect him to be very strong in net. The coach does as well. And there's been no hint at all that they would ever throw John Gibson into the fray at all, even though Freddie has given up so many goals over the course of the last three games. So I think, to answer your question, I think that Freddie will be his solid self. He just needs, like you said, we need to take care of ourselves. He needs everyone to support him, including forwards to pay their attention to defense.
When the Ducks had home ice, they were doing a pretty good job, and having last change as a result, they were doing a pretty good job of getting Ryan Kesler out against Jonathan Taves. With Game 7 being back in Anaheim today and Bruce Boudreau having that last change, do you expect that to be sort of a key matchup to watch? Almost could you go as far as saying whoever wins between Jonathan Taves and Ryan Kesler might very well lead their team to winning Game 7?
I think so. I mean, I said that at the in the beginning before Game 1, that this was the key matchup of the series. And now, it definitely looks, though, with what Quinville's done, it looks like he's going to have Taze and Kane on the same line. And so that puts extra pressure on Jakob Silverberg to really step up his game. I mean, Silverberg is he's a defensive first forward. He's going to pay strong attention. But those guys are so skilled, Taze and Kane together, that's going to be a lot of pressure on the Ducks. So I would say whenever the Ducks are facing that line, that's going to determine who wins this game.
Yeah, Lance, and I think you make some good points, and that's going to put more pressure on the Ducks' defense. But you know, I wanted to ask you about the Ducks' defense because, you know, a guy like Simon Dupre, who's playing with Cam Fowler right now, came over from Pittsburgh for Ben Lovejoy. I think he's done a very nice job there. And, you know, Clayton Stoner, you also mentioned earlier in the interview, he's been playing with Sammy Vatanen. I think he's really, you know, he's struggled at times, but he's been solid for the most part. When you look at the Ducks' 3D pairings, versus the Chicago Blackhawks, who really have been using four defensemen essentially all playoffs. Is that something that's really going to play in the Ducks' favor? I guess, you know, it's a pretty obvious question because Chicago Blackhawks really haven't been really trustworthy, whether it's David Rundblad or Kimmo Timonen or Kyle Kuminski.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's the point, I think, with the difference I was trying to make with Duncan Keith. I mean, obviously, the Ducks have the deeper defense. They are strong. I mean, they've got a guy like James Wisniewski on the bench, for God's sake. So
can't
I
can't get into
that,
a game.
Yeah, he can't get in. He can't squeeze in. And I mean, this is a guy that they acquired for these games. So it's interesting. The Prey has played it that well, and Stoner has been an enforcer. I just think that all of them have to be on top of their game. I mean, there have been times throughout the series where each of them has slipped a little bit, and it just has to be a shift after shift, solid performance by these guys. And I think that they, you know, if that does happen, the Ducks take care of business and move on to that Stanley Cup final. But you know, if they show any signs of shakiness again against a team that has been here before and knows how to win this game and gave the Kings everything that they could handle in last year's Game 7 Western Conference Final, that's going to be it's not going to be a good outcome for the Ducks.
Lance, we'll let you go on this last question. After Game 6, Ryan Getzlaf was especially critical of his own performance. I believe he referred to his play as awful or terrible, one of those adjectives. You know, is this game for Ryan Getzlaf? I mean, he's got the cup from way back when, and he's got the gold medals for Team Canada. But, you know, sort of as the top dog on the team, is this game sort of especially meaningful for him and especially critical to, quote-unquote, his legacy and his reputation as a member of the Anaheim Ducks?
Yes, I absolutely believe so. Ryan Getzlaf and Corey Perry, I mean, in 2007, when they won the Cup, both of them played well, but they were complementary players on those teams. Same thing with the gold medal teams. I mean, with Taze and Crosby on those rosters, those were not necessarily remembered as Ryan Getzlaf's teams. This is his team. This is Corey Perry's team as well. And for these guys, you know, coming off for Perry last year in Game 7, he was stopped on a penalty shot, and I think that for Getzlaf, coming off, like you said, his terrible Game 6, he's got to show up in a very strong way and lead his team to this victory. And he's the one ultimately who's going to wear this more than anyone else on the Anaheim roster.
Lance Pugmire is covering the Anaheim Ducks Chicago Blackhawks series for the LA Times. Lance, appreciate your time this morning. Enjoy Game 7. I think it's going to be a beaut tonight in Anaheim.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Take care, Lance.
Let's head
to break.
Lance,
you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Salmon took it away for the Caps. Here comes Green, and he shoots a sprawling block. He fires, he scores, and Mike Green has set the new NHL record for consecutive games with at least one goal for a defenseman. That's his eighth straight game with a goal. Mike Green breaking the record he shared with Mike O'Connell coming in. O'Connell with the Bruins in 1983-84.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The UFA of the Week segment is going to focus on Mike Green, defenseman of the Washington Capitals. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Bill Dwyer in town. He's been here finishing off a great two-week set at Rumors. Fantastic list of comedians upcoming. Check him out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Want to make note and thank Winnipeg. John Lovitz, he's coming at the end of July. All the shows already sold out. So John Lovitz, July 23rd to 26th, the Rumors completely sold out, but a lot of great comedians upcoming, rumorscomedyclub.com. Ezzie, Mike Green of the Washington Capitals, coming off of a three-year, $18.25 million contract. His cap hit was a little bit over $6 million, $6.083 million per season. 72 games played in 2014-15, 45 points, puts him tied for the 16th in defenseman points last year with some guy named Dustin Byfuglien, who Winnipeg Jets fans might be familiar with. At a point in time, Mike Green was one of the most feared offensive defensemen in the NHL. That's back in 08-09 when he was over a point a game both years, 73 points in 68 games in 08-09 and 76 points in 75 games in 09-10. Since then, injuries have slowed him a little bit, but a decent year for him this year in 45 points. That's the most he's had since 09-10. What's Mike Green going to get in the free agency world coming off of that $6 million contract?
We talked about it a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Jeff Petrie. I think he's going to get a lot of money.
Yeah.
And there are teams right now that have salary cap issues. We talked about the Chicago Blackhawks. The Philadelphia Flyers have a lot of money wrapped up in defensemen. The LA Kings had those salary cap problems earlier this year.
Yeah.
Not everybody is going to be calling Mike Green's agent, but there are going to be, I imagine, in the neighborhood of 6 to 12 teams that are serious about getting Mike Green. And you know, you mentioned that you know his days of dominating the defenseman scoring are over. You know, he was 70 plus points for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And now, you know, 45 points. The thing with Mike Green is, even though, you know, he might not be putting up those crazy numbers, 45 points for defenseman, as you mentioned, still puts him in top 20, and that is still highly coveted. Look at the New York Rangers, as you mentioned, Drew, when we were talking about last night's game. Keith Yandel, 7 points in the series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Those defensemen are invaluable. And Mike Green really, I thought, under Barry Trotz this year, it's unfortunate because the Washington Capitals aren't going to be able to afford to keep him.
No, but especially after their signings last year,
right,
of Matt Niskanen,
right,
and Brooks Orpik, yeah, where they threw a ton of money at
him. And Carl Alsner and John Carlson, those guys, that's their future on defense, right?
Sure, yeah.
So he just doesn't factor in, but he played a really nice nice role there with the Washington Capitals, playing with Tim Gleason on that bottom pair. And that's where I think he's the most effective. I think on many teams, he'll be top four. And you got to now talk about which teams are going to really be in serious consideration. And
well, let me just stop you for a second there. Sorry. I mean, the reason he was on the bottom pair in Washington is that his defensive shortcomings have been well documented over the years. And, you know, and that's really the biggest drawback you're getting from Mike Green is he's a tremendous offensive defenseman. But defensively, while he's not as bad as I think he was a few years ago, he's probably improved a little bit, but he's still a liability in his own zone.
Right, and I don't disagree with you, Drew. I do think that that's been overplayed a little bit. And what I mean by that is I think even though Mike Green isn't your prototypical shutdown defenseman, he's a pretty good defenseman. And it's always the knock on him has always been his decision-making. Mike Green's the type of guy that, you know, we talked about it. He's a very good power play player. That's always been the issue with Mike Green, that he makes the wrong decisions and reads and stuff like that, and he's not the most physical defenseman. But I agree with you. I mean, let's be honest. If you want to classify him, he's an offensive defenseman. He's most likely not going to be someone who ever plays at this point in his career like the Duncan Keith, Drew Doughty type of minutes. He's the type of guy that ideally on a good team, he's your at best fourth or fifth defenseman,
mm-hmm,
but a really good defenseman. I'm not saying that he can't be in your top four, but I think that he's ideally someone you want to pair with a stay-at-home defenseman. But back to, you know, what kind of money he's going to get and what kind of interest he's going to get. I think, you know, Mike Green at 29 years old, you got to think that someone's going to offer him 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, he turns 30 at the start of the 2015-16
right
season. So I think he turns 30 on October 12th. So that's right at the start of the season there. This is a guy who's had some injury concerns, which I think a lot of teams will factor in. This was the last 2 years he's been relatively healthy.
You know what though? I mean, even though he's had those injuries,
yeah,
I mean, Brooks Orpik's had injuries and the Washington Capitals signed him. He's
you're
the,
right,
the style of hockey he plays. So I know why you're saying that, but I I don't think that's going to – I think he gets a five-year contract. I think he's one of the first guys that signs on July 1st.
Really? Can you give a – I mean, he's coming off this $6 million-plus deal. Can you give him $6 million again for a guy who is – somewhat one-dimensional.
Yep, I think you do.
You think you can? He can get another $6 million. He's coming off 3 years, $18 million. You think he can get another 5 year, $30 million deal?
I do, and if you want to talk about a team that that we were just talking about, that Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen came from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, I think you want Mike Green. You make an offer on Mike Green. I think there's going to be a lot of teams that want to bring him in. I mean, we could go over. I mean, the Detroit Red Wings have been rumored to be interested in Mike Green for a long time. The type of up-tempo, skilled game that they play, and we know that they were interested in Dion Phaneuf. I mean, we can go up and down the NHL, and they're sure, as we mentioned, there's going to be teams that can't afford Mike Green and they don't fit in, but he's the type of player that you put him in any lineup, he makes the team better. And $6 million, you mentioned, it sounds like a big number, but $6 million really, I mean, that's what a really good third or fourth defenseman makes these days, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it might be a bit of an overpay, but his offensive skills are that good. I mean, I'm not Mike Green's cousin. I'm not his. I don't have his jersey on right now, but I do think he's that good. That a team will take a chance on him. I don't know if it's even taking a chance. I mean, Mike Green's an established defenseman. He's been in the league for 8 or 9 years now.
He's certainly an NHL defenseman. Nobody's disputing that. But this is a guy who you have to shield him in the minutes that he's playing. You have to put him out in offensive situations. He certainly is a top power play quarterback in the league. So if you're a team that's looking for a guy who can wants to quarterback your power play, he's certainly up at the top of the list. But like you said, any sort of defensive situation, he's not the guy you're turning to. So you're asking to pay, you're paying a lot of money to a guy who's one-dimensional, like I'm trying to think of the guy who used to play for Tampa Bay. That was always sort of the guy who would bounce around the league. If you needed somebody to quarterback your power play. I'll think about his name right now.
I'll throw out two, while you think about that, because it's not coming to my mind, Drew. I'll throw out two teams right now that, to me, Mike Green would be a great fit on.
Okay.
Dallas Stars, Colorado Avalanche. Two teams last year that the lack of puck-moving defensemen really hurt them. And that's important. I know Mike Green, he might not be your prototypical shutdown defensive defenseman, but those are two teams that definitely need a boost. I mean, that hurt them. If it wasn't for John Klingberg, I mean, the Dallas Stars defense was a complete mess, and I realized that, they traded Brendan Dillon earlier in the season for Jason Demers, and they thought that was going to help them a little bit. But those two teams, the style that they play, Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, that up-tempo style, I mean, I think you could put him in on one of either of those teams, and he'd be a great fit. So I think you make a good point. I mean, if you give Mike Green 5 years, $30 million, you hear that big number.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be too much? I don't know. I think he's it's not. It's very difficult around the trade deadline. That's what everybody's looking for. Everybody's looking for a Keith Yandel,
sure,
or a Mike Green, and so you have the opportunity. He he's turning 30. He's got a lot of good hockey left in him. To me, he's the number one UFA this year. I realize Bolesky and Joel Ward, and there's some other good ones. St. Louis, we could throw in. There's some other UFAs, but I do think Mike Green will be the most coveted when it comes around to July 1st.
Well, it'll be very interesting. That Dustin Byfuglien's representatives are looking at the Mike Green contract and probably using that as a bit of a benchmark, given that they finished with the same number of points.
That's good comparable.
They finished with the same number of points last season. I think Dustin Byfuglien's more impactful than Mike Green is, just by the nature of his size and sort of the entire package he brings. But they're both offensive first players. And, if Mike Green gets $6 million in the open market, 5 years, $30 million, Dustin Byfuglien's representatives are going to be probably using that and pointing to that as saying, this is where it starts for Dustin Byfuglien, and it's only going to go higher than that, I suspect.
Right, and Buff is obviously way more physical,
and it
plays a completely different game. But the thing with Mike Green is, you put him on a skilled team, and he can work a power play on a very skilled team. I just think like a team like Dallas and Colorado. I mean, I didn't pre-plan this. These are just teams I'm thinking of at the top of my head. You're off the top of my head. He'll fit right in. He can play very well. He played so well year after year with Ovechkin and Backstrom, and back in the day, Salmon and these guys. So I think a team is going to is going to offer him a big contract. And we've talked about it with the lack of quality UFAs out there.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a bad year.
Oh yeah, they're absolutely awful.
It's not going to be a good year for if you think there's going to be some crazies. I think there's going to be some good trades. I think you're going to see trades because these players just don't get to the UFA market anymore. They get locked up in the early 20s.
Or if you can't lock them up, you trade them away for someone else. But you're absolutely right. He's the guy who's got the highest cap hit, current cap hit, of anybody who's going to be a free agent on July 1st. And so it's likely that he might end up signing for the most amount of money, given that he's still sort of, you know, he's not too old. He's only going to be 30. So 30 is not, you know, he's not quite at the tail end of his career, and you don't expect him to get a 7-8 year deal. But if there's a bidding war that breaks out here, it's not unreasonable to believe that he's going to, you know, back the truck up and, you know, throw the money bags into the back of the vault.
Well, and you think 7 years. The problem is if a team signs him to 7 years, that contract could end up towards the end of it really hurting them, right?
Sure.
So that's always the issue. So that's why I said 4 or 5 years is a little bit safer. But
you know
exactly.
how it works. If there's a bidding war and, you know, you're not going to be – if you want him that badly and you're not going to be in the war until you add another year onto the end of the contract.
It happens with coaches now.
Well, it happens. And we saw what happened with Washington with Niskanen and Orpik last year. You know, they have to sign those guys. They're gonna regret the ends of those contracts, but, you know, that's someone else's problem for later on. Let's head to break. When we come back, we look at some of the coaching hires throughout the NHL. We start in Buffalo, where Dan Bylsma is their new head coach. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.